This is Mark Stein. Welcome to the last of our special Sinatra Centennial series, The Song Is You.
I hear music when I look at you, a beautiful theme of every dream I ever knew. Down deep in my heart, I hear it play. I feel it start and then melt away. I hear music when I touch your hand, a beautiful melody of some enchanted land. Music is sweet, the words are true, the song is.
Frank Sinatra sang the best songs of the 20th century. Some were by the big names, others were by fellas who aren't particularly well known, who happened to write one song that caught Frank's fancy. But over this series, we've heard some of Sinatra's best performances and the stories of the songs that helped him shine in the words of the songwriters who wrote them. For this final edition, the song is Burton Lane.
Unfortunately, it was a horror. I certainly wouldn't want to go to see it. I don't blame anybody else for not wanting to go.
Jerry Herman.
When I heard the Louis Armstrong record for the first time, I was in shock.
And Cy Coleman.
And then I said, here we go again. There goes my instrumental.
The song is them, and the singer is Frank Sinatra.
Why can't I let you know the song my heart would sing? That beautiful rhapsody of love and youth and spring. The music is sweet, the words are true, the song is you.
January 10th, 1956, Capitol Records in Los Angeles. Frank Sinatra with orchestra arranged and conducted by Nelson Riddle. The song is Ralph Freed and Burton Lane.
I like New York in June. How about you? I like a Gershwin tune. How about you? I love a fireside when a storm is due. I like potato chips, moonlight motor trips. How about you? I'm mad about good books. Can't get my fill. And James Durante's looks give me a thrill. Holding hands in the movie show when all the lights are low may not be new, but I like it. How about you?
Burton Lane had two of his songs on Sinatra's classic Songs for Swingin' Lovers album. That was the one that closed out the set. Lane was a Hollywood and Broadway composer whose songs Sinatra sang for three decades, from his earliest days with the Tommy Dorsey Band all the way to On a Clear Day and Come Back to Me in the late 60s. A long, long time ago, I spoke to Burton Lane about some of his great songs, including one written with a very obscure collaborator.
Well, you've worked with some of the great lyric writers, and obviously the catalogues of Frank Lesser and Ira Gershwin and Yip Harburg go on and on, but you worked at one time with Ralph Freed, who is really in a a little bit of a different situation in that his only standard was Written With You, and although he wrote innumerable other songs, none of them have survived quite like that. I wondered what you thought of him as a writer and how your collaboration came about with him.
My collaboration came about with him. He was Arthur Freed's brother. Arthur, of course, was a lyric writer who wrote Singing in the Rain and tremendous, all the Broadway melody songs. He was a very good pop writer, excellent writer, who became the outstanding producer of musical pictures in Hollywood, at MGM, certainly. He was the one who introduced me to his brother. And I thought Ralph was an underrated writer. I thought he wrote better than his reputation would show. And at that time, when I met him, he had one song which had been a big hit, A Little Dutch Mill. In A Little Dutch Mill, I don't remember the song, but that was the one big hit he had before I met him. And then, of course, we did have I Like New York and June, How About You for Judy and Mickey and Babes on Broadway.
December 1941, the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra, arranged by Paul Weston. Vocal refrain by Frank Sinatra.
I like New York in June, how about you? I like a Gershwin tune, how about you? I love a fireside when a storm is due. I like potato chips, moonlight and motor trips, how about you? I'm mad about good books, can't get my fill. And Franklin Roosevelt's looks give me a thrill. Holding hands in the movie show when all the lights are low may not be new, but I like it. How about you?
That's a catalogue song, and obviously a lot of the charm in a song like that is in the lyric. Does that make it a less exciting song for a composer to work on?
No, I love songs that have lyrics that you people love to sing. Mm. I made a contribution there too. I like a Gershwin tune.
Well, I was about to ask you about that, because I like a Gershwin tune, how about you? So many people have commented on the affinity between you and George Gershwin, and I think it was Yip Harburg who said some years ago now that you wrote the way George Gershwin might have written if he'd still be around. You're the only person whose melodies, I think the word Yip Harburg used was effervesced like George Gershwin's. And of course, you later ended up writing with Ira. Is there a special admiration you have for George Gershwin?
I should say there is. I was a great, great fan of George's from the moment I became conscious of songwriting. I was a teenager. I was a young, 11 or 12 or 13 years old. The minute I heard Gershwin's music, my father was a great lover of musical comedies, and every Friday, because sadly there would be no school and I could stay up late, my dad would take my stepmother and me and my brother to some musical show. And I can only tell you that when the orchestra started, when the overture started, and I saw the conductor get up and raise his baton, I started trembling at a Gershwin show. And I have never gotten over that hope that I'm going to hear something that exciting. I thought he was the most exciting composer in the theater. I grew to love Kern and Frimmel and Romberg. But there was a certain excitement that I felt, the originality of George. There was a great theatrical excitement in his music.
I like New York in June. How about you? I like a Gershwin tune. How about you? I love a fireside when a storm is due. How about you? I'm mad about good books. Can't get my fill. And James Durante's looks, they give me a thrill. Holding hands in the movie show when all the lights are low. May not be new, but I like it. I like it. I like it. How about you?
I met the Gershwins when I was about 17 years old, 17 or 18 years old, and it was Ira who introduced me to Yip. And Yip had been in the electrical appliance business and had gone out of business, had failed. And he once said that capitalism forced him into doing something he really always wanted to do, and that was to write songs. He had started out as a capitalist. And he had gone into business with someone he had gone to college with in the electrical appliance. I can't even imagine him in that kind of a situation. But Yip and I started to write songs, and nothing commercial happened with the early songs that we wrote. At that time, he was also working with Jay Gorney. He wrote Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? And I did my first commercial job with Yip, and we wrote the last show that Al Jolson appeared in, Hold On to Your Hats. And we got wonderful reviews for the score, and three songs immediately started to become popular.
July 1940, the dawn of Frank Sinatra's career. And here's a song from that Al Jolson show, Hold On to Your Hats. Very first Burton Lane tune ever recorded by Frank Sinatra with the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra.
Here was I, a gypsy, looking for a world to roam in. Now the world is in my arms. No more aimless searching for a place to feel at home in, for the world is in my arms. Mexican hills, Florida sky, tropical seas, here in your eyes. When I see you smile, I see the sunsets of Geneva. What's that magic in your charms? When I hold you, I hold the world right here in my arms.
You later wrote together in Hollywood, and one song, one of your early songs in 1941, I'll Take Tallulah, became a sort of hit and certainly made an impact in the film.
Yes, well, you know, that song originally was originally written, and we wrote it for a picture. It was a Red Skelton film. We had a lovely ballad, one of Yip's best lyrics, called "Poor You," that was in that picture. But "I'll Take Tallulah" started out to be "I'll Take Manila." And the Japanese took Manila, and we were stuck with either losing the song or Yip coming up with another lyric. And he almost overnight wrote "I'll Take Tallulah." And it was Tommy Dorsey's band that made a wonderful recording of it, and that became a big hit.
Solid chick, Olivia.
Or I'll gladly give you.
He throws her in the river.
There's one queen of Rula, Tallulah.
For that gal, Tallulah.
He's Tallulah's Rula.
I would fight a doula.
Tallulah's got a screwla.
I would climb a hilla.
Just like Jack and Jill.
I'd even paddle to Brazilla.
Why, this is getting silly.
Cause he loves her true love, Tallulah.
When she starts on the conga, why, Madame Lazonga is fricassee.
No one doing the hula can do what Tallulah can do to me. I have met Fatima.
Fatima is a schemer.
And I have met Makita.
Makita is a cheetah.
We have met Jemima.
Ah, she's a social climber.
We have met Ophelia.
She will double deal ya.
Just one girl is true love. I'll take true love.
Thank you.
It's a goofy song by Burton Lane and Yip Harbug, but a hell of a record. The Tommy Dorsey Orchestra with Ziggy Elman on trumpet, and vocals by Frank Sinatra, Joe Stafford, the Pied Pipers, and even a few lines by Tommy Dorsey himself. That's Cy Oliver's arrangement. I said that Burton Lane had two tracks on Sinatra's landmark 1956 album, Songs for Swingin' Lovers. How About You was one of them. This was the other.
I look at you and suddenly something in your eyes I see soon begins bewitching me. It's that old devil moon that you stole from the skies. It's that old devil moon in your eyes. You and your glance make this romance too hot to handle. Stars in the night blazing their light can't hold a candle to your razzle dazzle. You got me flying high and wide on a magic carpet ride full of butterflies inside. Wanna cry, wanna croon, wanna laugh like a loon. It's that old devil moon in your eyes. Just when I think I'm free as a dove, old devil moon deep in your eyes blinds me with love.
Sinatra with Nelson Riddle and a song from a Broadway hit about an Irish immigrant who winds up in the southern state of Missitucky, populated by racist senators, oppressed, dirt-poor sharecroppers, and all the rest. Yip Harbug was the most politically driven lyric writer of the Broadway Golden Age, and I raised the question with Burton Lane whether Harbug's politics caused them any problems.
In terms of content and Yip's message, all Yip wanted to do was write about people's right to freedom. And of course, he was able to express it in the show I did with him, with Finian's Rainbow.
What is the curse that makes the universe so all bewildering? What is the hoax that just provokes the folks they call God's children? What is the jinx that gives a buddy and his brother and everyone around the runaround? Necessity, necessity, that most unnecessary thing, necessity. What throws the monkey wrench in a fella's good intention? That nasty old invention, necessity. My feet wanna dance in the sun, my head wants to rest in the shade. The Lord says go out and have fun, but the landlord says your rent ain't paid. Necessity, it's plain to see. What a lovely old world this silly old world could be. But man, it's all in a mess, account of necessity.
Frank Sinatra, arranged by Nelson Riddle, conducted by Lynn Murray, from an aborted film version of Finian's Rainbow. There would be a few aborted film versions of Finian's over the years.
I wondered, because Finian's Rainbow is in the rare situation, despite the fact that at the time it produced it had a wonderful score and it produced a lot of hits. It took 20 years for it to come to the screen. I wondered if at the time, perhaps the theme of the musical was the reason why nobody in Hollywood was interested in filming it then.
I think you're absolutely right about that. Early in its run, I would say, see, we opened in 47, I would think around 49 or 50, we had very serious negotiations with 20th Century Fox, who wanted to buy Finian's Rainbow. And their starting price was a lot higher than we ended up getting many years later. But in the middle of the negotiations, the blacklist started. The House Un-American Affairs Committee, and studios did pull away from Finian's because of this subject matter. I was signed. In 51 or 2, I can't remember now, I think around 51 or 52, I was signed to Paramount as a producer and as a composer. The head of the studio was a man whose name was, Freeman. Why Frank Freeman? And we used to say, why Frank Freeman? And I had to think of that question to remember his name. Why Frank Freeman? Freeman was the head of Paramount, and he was the clearinghouse for all the studios. And when I say clearinghouse, anybody who was going to be employed by any studio, they had to clear it through Why Frank Freeman. He would check to see whether they had been named in Red Channels or in any of the committees investigating communism in Hollywood. And I remember going to see him, and I was seeing him for the first time. I had been at the studio 6 months, and I'd never met him. And then I had a message one day that he wanted to see me. So I went to see him the next day, and I told him that I would love to do Finian's Rainbow. I'd like to produce Finian's Rainbow. I had an idea. I wanted to use Danny Kaye as a leprechaun. But in the show, the leprechaun is challenged by Finney. He says, "You can't be a leprechaun. You're too tall." He says, "Yes, and I'm getting taller ever since you stole our crock of gold." Well, I wanted to start Danny Kaye as a very tiny person, and all through the picture, he keeps getting taller until he's his height, which is over 6 feet. Anyway, I wanted to make Finney, as I thought it could make a wonderful film. And Freeman said, that was written by the communist. And he had yipped down as a communist.
I look at you and suddenly something in your eyes I see soon begins bewitching me. It's that old make this romance too hot to handle. Stars in the night, blazing the light, can't hold a candle
to your razzle dazzle. You got me flying high and wide on a magic carpet ride, full of butterflies inside.
Wanna cry, wanna laugh like a loon. It's that old devil moon in your eyes.
Just when I think I'm free as a dove, old devil moon, deep
from that never-filmed film version of Finian's Rainbow, Sinatra, and the star of the original Broadway production, Ella Logan.
It didn't stop finally making a picture of Finian's into a movie. Unfortunately, it was a horror. I certainly wouldn't want to go to see it. I don't blame anybody else for not wanting to go. There wasn't one true second, not a second, that was true to the intent or what we had on the stage in that film.
Why? Because that score is such a good score. So many of the songs, Old Devil Moon, How Things in Glockamore, so many good songs in it. It must surely be a great disappointment when you come up with a score so full of delights that should have made a wonderful, that perhaps in the great days at MGM would have made a marvelous MGM musical. It must bother you, surely, that more people have seen the film around the world than have seen the stage show, is it?
I think that's true, and I think they're sorry for it, too, as I am sorry that they went to see it.
That 1968 film of Finian's was directed by Francis Ford Coppola, with British stars Tommy Steele and Petula Clark, and Fred Astaire in perhaps the worst musical of his career. View at your own risk. For a much better Finian's Rainbow, get out a Reprise Repertory Theatre album from 1963, produced by Frank Sinatra, featuring Barton Lane and Yip Harburg songs performed by Rosemary Clooney, Bing Crosby, Debbie Reynolds, Sammy Davis Jr., the Maguire Sisters, and of course the man who'd waited a long time to put this score on record.
It's that old devil moon in your eyes. Just when I think I'm as free as a dove. Old devil moon deep in your eyes blinds me with love. It blinds me with love.
Sinatra, arranged by Nelson Riddle, conducted by Morris Stoloff, from Frank's all-star cast recording of Finian's Rainbow. June 10th, 1964, Los Angeles. Frank Sinatra with the Count Basie Orchestra, arranged and conducted by Quincy Jones. The song is Jerry Herman.
Hello, Dolly. Well, hello, Dolly. It's so nice to have you back where you belong. You're looking swell, Dolly. We can tell, Dolly. You're still glowing, you're still crowing, you're still going strong. We feel the room swaying, 'cause the band's playing one of your old favorite songs from way back when. Take her rap, fellas. Find her an empty lap, fellas. Dolly'll never go away. Dolly'll never go away.
That's Sinatra at Reprise in 1964. What's the connection with this? Sinatra at Columbia, way back in 1948.
She's a sunflower, she's my one flower, she is the flower of my heart. I was born in Kansas, I was bred in Kansas, and when I get married, I'll be wed in Kansas. There's a true blue gal
who promised she would wait. She's a sunflower from the sunflower state. She's a sunflower, she's my sunflower, and I know we'll never part. She's a sunflower, she's my one flower, she's the flower of my heart.
Frank, arranged and conducted by Axel Stordahl with High White on guitar, and a minor hit that became the state song of Kansas. But like I said, what's the connection between that Mac David number and this Jerry Herman showstopper 16 years later?
Hello, Dolly. Well, hello, Dolly. It's so nice to have you back where you belong.
Well, when Mac David heard that, he thought that brand new 1964 song sounded a lot like his old 1948 song.
She's a sunflower, she's my sunflower, and I know we'll never part.
Mac David was the older brother of Hal David, of Bacharach and David. Do you know the way to San Jose, the look of love, raindrops keep falling on my head? Mac David thought the first four bars of Hello Dolly were stolen from the first four bars of Sunflower. Jerry Herman, the composer of Dolly, once told me he'd never heard the song Sunflower, and I'm inclined to believe him. He loved Broadway, and he never listened to anything else. Not rock and roll, not jazz, not country, not nothing. So he wanted to go to court and defend his song. But David Merrick, the producer of Hello Dolly on Broadway, had a hit show. And he had a movie offer from 20th Century Fox. And he was in a hurry to close that deal. And if there was a question mark over a title song that was already a big hit for Louis Armstrong, who's to say that film offer would even be on the table? So Jerry Herman never got his day in court. They settled for $250,000. And Mac David wound up making more money from those first four bars of Sunflower than from any other song he ever wrote. Frank Sinatra is the only man on the planet to have recorded both Sunflower and Hello Dolly. And granted they were 16 years apart, he doesn't appear to have noticed any similarities. Nevertheless, many, many years ago, I asked Jerry Herman to talk about where his idea for Hello Dolly actually came from. There's a bit of a hum on this tape. It was never intended for broadcast, but I hope you don't mind. He began by telling me that although he likes to have a hit song in his show scores, that's not how he writes them.
So I must say that that is something inherent in the way I write. It always thrills me when that happens, because that satisfies both sides of what I like to do. You know, I like to have people dance to my to my song. But, no, I don't sit down and say, I'm going to write a hit song here at all.
Well, I just wonder, because...
So, you see, I will never sacrifice a moment. If I lose a commercial song, I don't really care, because I write for the, you know, for the show. And the interesting thing is that the song that I never thought would be a commercial hit. Now, this is the truth, and you probably won't believe this because it's so crazy today for me to admit this, but the song that I never thought was commercial was Hello Dolly. Because if you examine that, and if you listen to that on the record, it is so 1890s. It is so, and I'll tell you where that inspiration came from. It came from Alice Faye in Lillian Russell. Film Lillian Russell. She sang in some nightclub, I think it was Delmonico's, with waiters. And that image of the bustle and the waiters was somewhere in my head. And I thought, that's what this should look like. And I wrote, and it's that melody, it's so 1890s, and that orchestration. When I heard the Louis Armstrong record for the first time, I was in shock. I said, isn't that amazing that man took that eight, yes, you know, that period song and jazzed it up. I said, God love him, and I hope something happens to it. I had no idea.
Yeah. Well,
so that's the perfect example.
And Frank Sinatra then made
Exactly. And it went on and on and on.
And Robin Merrill did a version that was very slow and sensuous.
Exactly.
Is that the mark of a good song, really, that you should be able to change the mood?
Well, I don't know if it's the mark of a good song, but I think it's the mark of a very versatile song that can have many lives. And I think that's what has happened with a lot of my songs. They have many lives.
Louis, it's so nice to see you back where you belong. You're back on top, Louis, never stop. Louis, you're still singing, you're still swinging, you're still going strong. You get the room swaying when you start in playing one of your great songs or songs from way back when. Sing up a great big storm, Louis. Promise you won't go away. Promise you won't go away. Promise you won't go away again.
I'd love to have seen Louis Armstrong's face the first time he put that LP on the turntable. Sinatra with the Basie Band and Harry Sweets Edison on trumpet from their second album, It Might As Well Be Swing. September 17th, 1952, 30th Street in New York City. Frank Sinatra's final session for Columbia Records with orchestra arranged and conducted by Percy Faith. The song is Joseph McCarthy and Cy Coleman.
I'm sentimental, so I walk in the rain. I've got some habits even I can't explain. Could start for the corner, turn up in Spain. But why try to change me now? I sit and daydream, I've got daydreams galore. Cigarette ashes, there they go on the floor. I'll go away weekends, leave my keys in the door. But why try to change me now?
Why try to change me now? The last song Frank Sinatra recorded for Columbia Records, and also something of a personal credo for Sinatra, especially after Mitch Miller and Columbia had expended so much effort trying to change him. A couple of years after that song, the composer Cy Coleman began a rather stormy professional collaboration with the lyricist Carolyn Lee that produced a couple of the mature Sinatra's biggest songs, songs he would sing until the mid-1990s. Many, many years ago, I asked Cy Coleman how he and Carolyn had got together.
I think there was a hangout in an old place called the Turf Restaurant.
we don't have those kind of places much anymore. You know, where songwriters and people who are with the music industry used to gather. But we did meet there, and we talked about writing together one day. And one day she just said, in her own fashion, well, why don't we go upstairs and write something? And it was very successful. We wrote a song called A Moment of Madness in one of the publishing offices upstairs. And we had finished in a day. The publisher took it the next day. And in some way, and some terrific thing happened, is that Sammy Davis Jr. recorded it the very next day. Now, I mean, that's really miraculous, the fact that he happened to be in the studio just at that time. You couldn't do that in a movie and have it believed. And we thought we had a good thing going, which obviously we did.
Here's a defining song of the Cy Coleman-Carolyn Lee partnership, played and sung by the composer.
Those fingers in my hair, that sly come hither stare, that strips my conscience bare, it's witchcraft. And I've got no defense for it, 'cause the heat is too intense for it. What good would common sense for it do?
There's a lot of electricity that went on in our creative efforts. There was a lot of enthusiasm, and there was a great deal of enjoyment, you know, in the work. So that's how that started.
Well, in one of your earlier songs, I think it was Joe McCarthy wrote the lyric, just think of a catchy tune, come up with a rhyme for June.
A Tin Pan Alley.
Yes. And
well, you might call the turf restaurant Tin Pan Alley.
Well, I wonder.
And she certainly couldn't call it a restaurant.
But I wonder, because if anything, I mean, you did, the thing that marks those songs that you wrote together in the 50s, obviously before you wrote your theatre scores, is that as young writers at that time, you had such an, immediately your songs were taken up by all the best singers, Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, Sammy Davis Jr. Do you think that's because they demanded a little more than many songs?
Well, I think they had quality. I think they were written with purpose. And I think it was recognizable that they had style. I mean, it's not nice of me, I suppose, to give my own review on it, but I mean, it's so many years ago, I suppose I can now. But it's there were songs that had a distinctive flavor to them. The combination of Carolyn and myself produced something that was a little different. I found that she wrote very, very sensitively. There was always a lot of sex and allusions to sex. I thought she wrote very sexy without ever having to say it.
Those fingers in my hair, that sly come hither stare, that strips my conscience bare, it's witchcraft. And I've got no defense for it, the heat is too intense for it, what good would common sense for it do? 'Cause it's witchcraft, wicked witchcraft, and although I know it's strictly taboo, when you arouse the need in me, my heart says yes indeed in me, proceed with what you're leading me to. It's such an ancient pitch, but one I wouldn't switch, 'cause there's no nicer witch than you. And although I know it's strictly taboo, when my heart says yes indeed in me. Proceed with what you're leading me to. It's such an ancient pitch, but one that I'd never switch, 'cause there's no nicer witch than you.
Now, in witchcraft, she had those triple rhymes. I like to think that I wrote that way too, you know, musically. I gave it exactly what I felt would be my best effort for what we were doing. I think we made magic together. We didn't get, we loved each other, but we couldn't get on. You know, it was like a marriage with, where we constantly and bitterly fought. And that's one of the reasons, you know, that we had those long periods away from each other. What did I say? But there was still a great love there. And we wrote a picture after that. We did Father Goose, we wrote Pass Me By.
That's right, and that was the song that legend has it was inspired by Cary Grant's Walk.
Yes, that's true. Cary Grant brought me out there, actually. It was peculiar the way he did, because a publicist at Capitol Records sent him my album. For what reason, I didn't know, because he was not a disc jockey, but I was very happy that she did. And he wanted to meet me, and we met at his bungalow on the lot at Universal Studios. I was out there doing another album. And he sang all my songs, and he just couldn't have been, and still is. We're great friends today. He couldn't have been a more delightful and sympathetic, and how can I say? He was somebody who wanted to help. He wanted to do something for me. He said he liked the way I wrote, and he said, one day I'm going to call you to do a picture. And I thought to myself, well, that's wonderful. If he does, that'd be just fabulous. And if he doesn't, I've had lunch with Cary Grant. So, anyway, he did. And I scored the film Father Goose, and in it I had to find the main theme, and it was leaving the commissary again. And we had been singing, he'd sang me old English music hall songs, you know, during the whole lunch. I remember he made me so nervous doing it that I never ate my eggs. I mean, I was somewhat, my fork was somewhat suspended between my plate and my lips, and I decided to give up on it. So, and he sang me all these English music hall songs that he'd remembered. He felt that it should be something like that. And I'd been well indoctrinated before the end of the lunch with them. And I was paying attention to what he said. And by the way, he finished my eggs for me. He said, oh, we mustn't leave the food. And he finished the eggs. And we walked out of the commissary. I said, he walks in that tempo. And that's exactly the tempo. It was that kind of jaunty tempo. And so I figured, well, you mustn't be hit over the head four times in a row to see what, you know, it's obvious. So I wrote Pass Me By that afternoon in that tempo. And of course, the rest is whatever there was.
Pass me by, pass me by. If you don't happen to like it, pass me by.
I've got me 10 fine toes to wiggle in the sand. Lots of idle fingers snap to my command. A lovely pair of heels that kick to beat the band. Contemplating nature can be fascinating. Add to these a nose that I can thumb and a mouth by gum have I to tell the whole wide world. If you don't happen to like it, deal me out. Thank you kindly, pass me by.
Pass me by, pass me by. If you don't happen to like it, pass me by.
Well, I couldn't honestly call that the greatest Sinatra performance or the greatest Billy May arrangement, but I do like the idea of a song based on Cary Grant's Walk, and Frank certainly gives it some welly, as they'd say back when Cary Grant was a touring acrobat at the Alhambra in Sheffield, Yorkshire. And here's a funny thing. There are any number of terrific songs with terrific second choruses that Sinatra rarely bothered with. Anything Goes, Making Whoopee, Lady is a Tramp. Cole Porter, Larry Hart had reams of additional lyrics, and Sinatra eschewed the lot. He came back after the instrumental, singing the same words he'd sung before the instrumental. But not here. For this silly, goofy, pseudo-English music hall song, Sinatra took the trouble to sing the second chorus.
Behold me two great shoes that never saw a shine. Trousers I can hold up with the laundry line. A lovely patch that hides an awful lot of spine. Shirt tails flying, I'm a blooming dandelion. Have two of these, grin from ear to ear. All the proper gear have I to tell the whole wide world. If you don't like the assortment, bail me out. Thank you kindly, pass me by. Pass me by, pass me by. If you don't happen to like it, pass me by. Pass me by, pass me by. If you don't happen to like it, pass me by.
After walking out of the recording studio on October 3rd, 1964, I don't suppose Sinatra gave that song another thought in the rest of his life. But the other Cy Coleman, Carolyn Lee numbers he sang were another matter. Witchcraft stayed with him almost to the end. It's there in 1993 on the Duets album, with Frank giving a "Hey, you little witch" right at the end to Anita Baker. And this next song stayed with Sinatra to the end and beyond. He made it a standard. Even though, as I suggested to Cy Coleman all those years ago, it's not the most obviously singable tune. But Carolyn Lee wanted everything to sing.
Carolyn, like any really good writer, had a need to write. And she had a need to write excellently. Didn't make any difference whether it was for a pop song, a commercial for toothpaste, or a letter. You know, Carolyn was a demanding artist, I mean, at her work, and as a result of that, what she did do was put everything she had into a lyric.
I wondered as well, because of the songs from that period, I wondered how you worked together, because The Best Is Yet to Come, for example, is not... is not an immediately vocal line. I don't think, I may be wrong, and yet she managed to write a lyric that sort of sat on it perfectly. Did you write those sort of things very spontaneously at the time, or were they things that took a lot of labor?
Well, first let me say one thing, that you were wrong, obviously. I only say that because so was I. And I used to complain bitterly about Carolyn and the fact that she'd want to put everything that I wrote to a lyric. I used to say, if I played an arpeggio at the piano, you know, I'd have to hide it because she'd put a lyric to it. And The Best Is Yet to Come was a little instrumental I had written for myself in a little jazz group. And it's constructed so that the melody keeps repeating. And I'd worked out an entire thing where you have echoing back and forth at a very furious tempo. And Carolyn liked the song, you know, and I played it for her, and she said, I could put a lyric to that. And then I said, here we go again, there goes my instrumental. And she took it with her and came up with this wonderful lyric. And of course I was worried about these intervals that people had to sing, but it seems if you present the challenge to people, they rise to it.
Out of the tree of life, I just picked me a plum. You came along and everything started in to hum. Still, it's a real good bet, the best is yet to come. Best is yet to come, and babe, won't that be fine? You
think you've seen the sun, but you ain't seen it shine. Wait till the warm-up's underway. Wait till our lips have met. And wait till you see that sunshine day. You ain't seen nothing yet. The best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine? Best is yet to come, come the day you're mine. Come the day you're mine. I'm gonna teach you to fly. We've only tasted the wine. We're gonna drain the cup dry. Wait till your charms are ripe for these arms to surround. You think you've flown before, but baby, you ain't left the ground. Wait till you're locked in my embrace. Wait till I draw you near. Wait till you see that sunshine place. Ain't nothing like it here. The best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine? The best is yet to come, come the day you're mine. Come the day you're mine. And you're gonna be mine.
Frank Sinatra with the Count Basie Orchestra, arranged and conducted by Quincy Jones. Music by Cy Coleman, words by Carolyn Lee. On February the 25th, 1995, Sinatra appeared at the Marriott Desert Springs Resort in Palm Springs for his own celebrity golf tournament. And to a crowd of 1,200 people, he gave his final concert. It wasn't announced as such, only a few people knew. And there were just half a dozen songs on the set list. I've Got the World on a String, You Make Me Feel So Young, Fly Me to the Moon, Where or When, My Kind of Town. And then Bill Miller began the unmistakable four-bar piano intro, extended to 8 bars on this occasion, because the old man didn't seem to be in any hurry to start singing. And at the end he said, "Thank you very much," and a 79-year-old singer brought a 6-decade performing career to a close. Frank Sinatra sang all the great standards, but it was Cy Coleman and Carolyn Lees that he took with him into eternity. His gravestone bears the words, "The best is yet to come." "Wouldn't it be nice," said Cy Coleman, "if it's true?"
Best is yet to come, and it's gonna be fine. Best is yet to come, come the day that you're mine. Come that day when you're mine, and I'm gonna make you mine.
Thank you. Thank you. The voice was Frank Sinatra. The song was Cy Coleman, Jerry Herman, and Burton Lane. I hope you've enjoyed spending some time in this Sinatra centennial season with the men and women who wrote the songs he sang. If you did, maybe we'll do it again in the months ahead. As Jerome Kern and Oscar Hammerstein said all those years ago, the music is sweet, the words are true.
The music is sweet, the words are true, the song is you.